Hello and welcome back to the Goat Cave Podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to mention a few things. So first of all, we were recently featured on Our BMX's Instagram story, which was a huge shout out for us. Thank you so much to everybody over at Our BMX. I really appreciate that. You know, we might even have a couple new followers from that. So if you're new here from Our BMX, thank you guys so much for coming over and checking out the show. Later this week, I will be a guest on Early 2000s BMX Instagram page. So if you guys don't follow them, definitely check them out. These guys are constantly posting content every day of, you know, mid-school riding and whatnot, which if you've listened to the show before, you know, I'm a huge fan of mid-school. But yeah, on top of posting old clips and whatnot, these guys also do a live stream pretty much once a week with just different people within the BMX community. So yeah, I'll be streaming live with them on their page later this week. Check me out on Instagram and you should be able to get an update on when that'll be. So I want to give a huge shout out and say thanks to Ashton, who became the first person to donate to the Goat Cave Podcast through PayPal. Ashton, huge thank you for donating to the show. I really, really appreciate it. As many of you guys know, this show is not cheap to produce and, you know, every little bit helps quite a bit. I definitely ask that, you know, you don't have to donate. If I have product or merch, buy that first. But, you know, in Ashton's case, thank you so much for donating. It does quite a bit for the show. And for future people that are considering, you know, maybe donating to the show, Ashton will actually be able to get the next three episodes early because he donated. So, you know, there's a little bit of incentive there. Don't feel the need that you have to donate. You don't at all. This show's free. You know, all I ask is that if you enjoy the show and you listen to it all the time, maybe give it a share once in a while. Tell your friends about it. It in turn will actually do a lot more for me. In about a month, I'm going to be a guest on the 9-5 Adventures podcast. So if you guys have any questions for him, shoot him a message on Instagram. I'll have his info in the description of this video and in the Spotify details. I'm, you know, really excited for this. Aaron's a really cool guy who hit me up a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's going to be great. And the last thing I'm going to mention before we bring our guest in is last year for 2020, we were in the top 10% of most downloaded podcasts that are distributed through Buzzsprout. So, you know, Buzzsprout takes care of 87,000 different podcasts. And to be in the top 10% of most downloaded is a pretty good feeling. So thank you guys so much for checking out the show, sharing it with your friends, and, you know, coming back to this each week. I greatly appreciate it. And trust me, this means a lot to me. So thank you guys. Hello and welcome back to the Goat Cave Podcast. Today's guest is a local rider who loves X-Up rides and has been traveling across the US with the idea of hosting a jam in every major city. Not only that, but he is the man behind Capital BMX and Tim's pre-owned BMX. Tim Hankins, my dude, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. Just out here in Savannah, Georgia right now, chilling.
Fuck yeah, man. So you've actually been traveling quite a bit this year to do a new jam series that you started. So this is a really cool idea and I love it, man. I really think that a lot more people need to jump on board and do this kind of thing. I think it would really bring BMX, you know, to the next level. But before we jump into that, why don't we talk about how you got into riding?
How I got into riding. funny story, actually. I was a little chubby fat kid. I was like 13. I had just moved to St. Louis, Missouri. And I don't know. I just played video games a lot. And because of Call of Duty, honestly, I had it in my head. I was like, man, I'm going to join the military. So I started riding my Walmart bike around the block with the idea of, you know, getting in shape and whatnot. And sure enough, I ran into some dudes a couple blocks over that have like kicker ramps in their yards and shit, just little plastic 1080 ramps, you know. They were ramping them and they called me out on my bike and got me to start jumping them. And that's kind of where it all began. I just started riding further and further away from the house, finding street spots and stuff to ride my bicycle on.
Fuck yeah, man. That's actually a really similar story to quite a few people, right? I feel like we've all kind of started in that same way. And I think that Crandall painting that he did, where it's literally the bricks and the board, is like synonymous with BMX, right? That's kind of how everybody got their start, right? Was just by jumping little tiny things. And then, you know, you start to learn a little bit more about the industry and whatnot. And tricks, of course, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so do you remember what the first bike you had was? That's always an interesting one, right? Because I feel like sometimes the first bike that we have is like instantly the bike we always want afterwards.
It's hard for me to like pinpoint to me like what was my first bike, like as far as like BMX goes. Like when I was real young, I had it was a 2004 GT Mach 1. And it was like a department store GT with like the coaster brake and all that. And that was my first bike. Technically, maybe it was a BMX bike, so it was a piece of junk. And I don't know, like I never knew what BMX was at the time. That was just what I rode around the neighborhood. Maybe I'd do some skids with the coaster brake going down a hill. But it wasn't until years later when I had another department store bike. It was actually a Razor, like scooter company. BMX bike of some sort. It was crazy. It had cast iron three-piece cranks and some crazy internal headset gyro thing, like sat inside the head tube, and the head tube was like gigantic. Crazy thing. And that's what I like discovered BMX riding. That's what I did, what I consider my first trick on, which was just a foot jam, so like not even fakie on flat. And then I bought a $70 DK RT frame off of Amazon and just kind of started upgrading that. But I never really had like an actual stock BMX bike when I started. Just kind of upgraded from the Walmart bike life.
That's awesome though, man. I really love that. You know, when I first started, I bought like a crappy bike and just kind of built up off of that. And it wasn't long until I had like a real BMX bike, you know?
Right. No, I hear you.
Hell yeah, man. So why don't we move on to the jams? So right away, you know, this was a huge thing for me when I saw that you were going to commit to doing, you know, however many jams. It's a lot, you know, and you're traveling from state to state doing this as well. This was huge. I thought that this was such a great move that we haven't seen in a long time, if ever, right? Like we've seen some where it's maybe three different jams in three different places, but like to do what you're intending to do, which is essentially go to each state and have a major BMX jam in a major city there. So what led you to kind of wanting to do this?
Honestly, it's been a dream of mine for probably like 5 years now or so. Like me and my homie just one night drinking whiskey in the back of the van after a session, just talking about like the future of Capital BMX and stuff. We were just like, dude, like, you know, the Capital Lou Jam worked good and they're a good time and like BMX in our area benefits from that. So like, why not take it to the next scale, get a bus, renovate it, you know, to be half bike shop, half living quarters, and just take it across the country and do Capital Lou Jams everywhere, essentially. So it's always been in the back of my mind. And this year, through a bunch of fortunately unfortunate events, it kind of just happened. And I wasn't really ready for it to happen by any means, but I guess I just wasn't really ready to give up on my dreams either. I had to grab them by the balls.
Fuck yeah, man. But that's the kind of attitude that you need to have, right? Like, this is something that you've been thinking about for a long time. And you know what? I've actually considered doing this before. And my thing was that with the way that I do my jams, I don't get any sponsors. I give away cash at all of my events and I just can't afford it, right? So I'm sure that if I wanted to, I could get some sponsors on board that would be down to do it. But to hear that like you're going through all of this for it is incredible, right? And I think a lot of people need to show up to these jams and really see kind of, you know, what Capital is all about. But yeah, before we kind of dive deep on that, why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you started doing BMX jams? Because obviously, you know, this isn't your first one. You've done them for years now.
Yeah. Honestly, it all started one day. It wasn't even supposed to be like a jam, but I just like made a little flyer. I wanted to film a video in downtown St. Louis. It was like a Where's Waldo themed video. And I was like, all right, like I'll dress up as Waldo and like we'll get some clips and like make it look like everybody's riding through the streets hunting for me. I was trying to get artsy with it. And like 35, 40 people showed up for that. And it was like, oh geez, like we couldn't even film the video. It was like pretty much a street jam, a small street jam. And after that, I was like, oh, okay, like that kind of worked. Let's try to do like an actual jam jam. And that was when I did the first Capital Lou Jam in downtown St. Louis. And that was like, it was super unorganized. I was kind of like testing the waters, if that makes sense. I just threw a flyer together again, like, yo, we're meeting at the Taco Bell, gonna ride street from there, and wound up getting like 20 or more sponsors for that, I think, and had like a bunch of prizes and just like a bunch of people all over the country like sharing the flyer and stuff, and like it wound up being a good time. I think like maybe like 80 to 100 people showed up. And then, you know, the next year I just took it more serious, organized it better, got in contact with Shady Jack's, which is a major bicycle bar in downtown St. Louis, and got them to agree to let us host the jam from there and like have an after party there and all that. And, the second year, I think there was like, I don't know, anywhere from 250, like maybe 275 people there. And it was just absolutely insane. Dudes from all over the country and whatnot. And just made that an annual thing after that. We go to Shady Jack's every year, do the same thing. New people show up every year and it's a good time. I've been waiting for the right opportunity to take that same idea and apply it to the road, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you made the right move by, you know, doing it around now instead of like all those years ago when you first kind of came up with it, right? Because what I think is super important is that you know what you're doing when it comes to hosting a jam. Like for me, I've been hosting jams for 8 years now, and it's always one of those things that it's a big event, right? You've got multiple people coming, and you also have to think about all the stuff that could happen because you're not at a skate park, you're at Riding Street, right? So you always kind of have a few things in the back of your head, right? Like at least as you know, a host or someone who's in charge of the event, right? Like my first thought is, okay, if somebody gets hurt, how are we going to get them to the hospital without needing an ambulance? You know, how are we going to have 100 of us riding this ledge and not get kicked out? Stuff like that, right? But I think you guys are doing a really good job, right? And with the Capital Lou Jams, you guys had such a great turnout for pretty much all of them. Like I've seen all the videos, you know, and I definitely would love to get down there one day because they look like a lot of fun, right?
We're here to do it, Cam.
Yeah, dude.
And it's gonna be mental, more mental than ever, and that's for sure.
Fuck yeah, man. Yeah. I was gonna say, you know, a few years back, you guys had a fucking guy pull a gun on you guys, which is pretty scary, right? And then, you know, just everything that kind of goes on with the jams and whatnot. So, you know, how do you kind of go about planning these things, especially when it comes to getting sponsors, right? Because for me, I haven't dealt with getting sponsors in years. I just sponsor it myself. I give out all my own money, or I'll look to the community to pile in some donations for it. And I always find that's a good way to do it. But, you know, getting parts and stuff is always great. Like, people love it.
Yeah. I mean, when I get sponsors, I mean, honestly, I just look at like all the BMX companies whose parts I ride or whose parts I like, you know, it's like all the major BMX companies really. And I'll just shoot them an email. I'll send them a flyer. Like, look, here's what's going on. You know, it really benefits the scene here where I'm doing jams. And, you know, obviously it's beneficial for the brands, like advertisement wise to sponsor a jam. So, and a lot of times they're really into it. I don't know. Honestly, I've never put too much thought into it. I just reach out and say what's up. And more often than not, companies like the sound of it and want to be involved. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I think what's super important too is that this isn't your first jam, right? You know, you've done these for years now, so you know the route on how to get sponsors and whatnot and how to speak with sponsors and everything. And then on top of that too, sponsors can trust you, you know, like bike companies talk, they can all go to somebody and say, hey, you know, this kid in St. Louis wants to do a jam. Have you guys worked with him before? What was your thoughts, right? And obviously people are going out of their way to say awesome things. So good for you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Kim.
Fuck yeah. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the, you know, the multi-city jam. So this is such a cool idea, and I've thought about doing it for about a year or two now. And then when I saw that you were doing it, instantly I was like, that's awesome, man. Like, you know, I was saying earlier that we need more of this, and I think you would definitely agree, right? Like, how's the experience been so far, and where have you gone?
So far, it's been really good. Honestly, I was extremely nervous going into it. I had pretty much nothing at the time when I started it. I was like at a point in my life where like I either had to like hang it up or make it work, you know, and I'm just not ready to hang BMX up. So, balls to the wall, getting the damn thing done, and the title of the tour, Do the Damn Tour. And honestly, it has been fantastic so far. More than I could have ever dreamed. If I had known it could work out this smoothly, I probably would have done it a long time ago without hesitation. And so far I started the tour in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I worked my way down to Charlotte and then Charleston, South Carolina. And now I'm here in Savannah, Georgia. I've taken the past week off because it's too much to do a BMX jam literally every weekend. I'm just doing 3 a month, taking a week off. I've had the week off here in Savannah, and I've just been chilling here. And now starting tomorrow, we're going to be getting everything ready for the Savannah jam. Then after that, I'm off to Florida, doing 5 stops in Florida. And I've already got the cities booked for series number 2 of the tour, which will be working my way back up north into the Midwest. We'll be doing Capital Lou Jam during this time, a lot of other cool cities in the area. And then after that, I think I might head down to Texas.
Oh, wow. That would be awesome, man. I think people would really enjoy that, right? And to see that you're really going like super far with it is really cool, right? Like, not only did you guys start this in North Carolina, but who knows where you'll end it, right? Like, and what I think is cool too is the fact that, you know, you've only got, I think, 10 different dates up at the moment, but it's not that you aren't like doing any other ones. You're doing them. It's just planning it, right? And I think that's a big part, especially when it comes to a street jam, because you got to know where the spots are, right? So how have you been able to find all these spots to use?
So pretty much, like when I started it all, I just reached out to dudes in the areas and like told them like, look, this is what I'm doing. And they like acquired photos for me to use to make the flyers and whatnot. And then, I pretty much just show up to town, like anywhere from 2 to 4 days before the jam, link up with those dudes, ride the area, you know, gives me a good chance to like film with a lot of the out of town homies that I haven't met before, haven't seen in a while, get to see all the spots, get to enjoy the city. And then by the time the jam comes around on Saturday, like I've got it all mapped out on my phone.
Fuck yeah, man. That's awesome. That's really quick, right? And even for me, right, I've only ever done them in my hometown, which is Kitchener, Ontario. And every year that we do it, I try and find a couple new spots and then keep a couple classic ones, right? And what's always difficult is finding the routing, right? Is how are we going to get people to each spot without having any crazy issues? So yeah, to see that you're able to do all of this in like a few days is incredible, man. You should be proud of yourself.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Cam. It's all just a part of having fun riding my bike, really.
Fuck yeah, man. So why don't we talk about the first stop? What was the first stop this time, and how did it go? You know, what were some of the craziest moves that went down that day?
Okay, so the first stop was supposed to be Norfolk, Virginia, but unfortunately that got rained out. And obviously that's kind of a problem for me when I have jams planned, you know, like the next weekend and whatnot. It's kind of hard to postpone a jam when I'm touring. So I just had to cancel that. And then what would have been the second stop became the first stop. That was in Raleigh, North Carolina. A lot of awesome dudes in that area that I had known for a little bit now through the internet, and then meeting them in Richmond. CJ Wallace and Justin Griffin are two to name. Really good homies that made all that possible. And the turnout there was insane. I was so nervous. I was sitting, it was like a random bus lot that they found. They were like, yeah, you can park your bus here for the day. Everybody can meet up here. We can ride out from here. I pulled up there at like 9 a.m, I think. And I was like, all right, like, I don't know what's going to happen today at all. And sure enough, they came out real deep. I think there was maybe as much as 70 people there. Definitely at least like 50, I think. There's dudes throwing down bangers left and right all day long. There was people just hanging out, smoking joints, drinking beers, watching. It was a perfect time. Way more than I expected, for sure. It really, really set everything on the right course for the whole tour. I really needed that.
Fuck yeah, man. That's really cool to hear about, especially with the, you know, it's one of those things that goes synonymous with BMX jams is just tall cans everywhere, right? Like drinking beers all day, hanging out with the crew and whatnot. There was definitely some shredders there, right? There's this kid, I forget his name, but I think the clip is, the clip's right behind me here, doing the like crazy roof drop thing. That was nuts, where it's like drop off of one roof, turn around. Way. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty wild, eh?
Yeah. About like 6 times, I think. And it was like easily a 10-foot tall roof. And what's kind of hard to see in the clip is like, there's like a 2-foot ledge he jumped over, like taller than wheel height. It like went halfway up his head, man. And he just came in full speed, launched over that and down at least like 10 or 11 feet. And that dude, again, he was one of the dudes that helped make that jam possible, with like getting me a photo and whatnot. And he's insane. he's one of them bone deaf kind of guys, if you know what I mean.
That's awesome.
All day,
man.
Long, like the flat ledges and whatnot with us. Like, yo, Tim, like, we need to find me a roof. Yo, Tim, we need to find me a roof. I was like, Justin, look, man, you find a roof and I'll tell everybody to come over to it and watch you jump it. And he comes over to me. He's like, yo, Tim, I just found a roof right here over the street. Like, I'm pretty sure some of these guys will like trick it, but like, I'm down to just jump it at least to get it started. I'm thinking like, okay, you know, it must be a small roof or something. He takes us there and I'm like, Justin, dude, like nobody else is going to even hit this, let alone trick it. Like, this is all you, my guy. And yeah, he got the damn thing done. It was freaking awesome.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool to hear about. I do love that, right? Where it's like, yeah, I think everybody would be down to shred this thing. Somebody would probably 360 down it. It's like, no way, dude. Like, maybe a bar spin. You know, if you got a kid who's real good with bars, he might send that.
And on a setup like that, I doubt that even. That ledge he jumped over was ridiculously tall for the drop.
Yeah.
And worked one good time on it, too. He got melted.
Yeah, I saw that. I think it was raining that day earlier, right? Because it seemed like it was kind of iffy with the weather. Yeah.
Yeah, and the roof was wet. Pretty much it rained all night. And then, and again, like at 9 o'clock in the morning when I was in the parking lot, like it wasn't raining, but it was cloudy and the ground was just so puddles everywhere. And sure enough, at like 11 o'clock, as soon as everybody like started pulling up, like the sun came out, like, full force, and it dried up within the hour. We were out of the lot and everything was dry by noon. Ended up working out great. And then it started raining again, like as we kicked off the after party. Like, we had the perfect period of street jam.
Fuck yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I deal with every year, right? Is the night before the jam, I'm always freaking out, like, dude, it better not fucking rain, because I always feel like a moron if I, you know, cancel the jam before, like literally the day before, and then, you know, the next day comes and it's shitty all morning and then it's like perfect all afternoon. But my thing is, like, people drive from so far to get there. So I always feel like an asshole if the, you know, day gets taken out. But if it was raining all day and those people showed up, I think they'd be a lot more upset.
True. Yeah. Yeah, it's always been a big worry for me. Luckily, I mean, like, knock on wood, but I've never really had too much of an issue with weather. And the biggest issue I've had with the jam with coronavirus this past year made me postpone Capital Lou Jam like 6 months out, I think, in total. Had to postpone it multiple times. And that was just a nightmare, especially considering I was living in Virginia and like had to keep like replanning my travels out to St. Louis to do it every time. So, but yeah, it, the weather tends to work out good.
Yeah, man, it's got to be.
Charlotte was kind of the same way. Right up, right on time, and we jammed it out.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I was going to say, with this past year and coronavirus and everything, it's made doing jams so hard, right? Like, obviously, the biggest jam of the year, Swamp Fest, was canceled. And the amount of people that were pissed about that was like, I don't know, as someone who, you know, plans jams and puts their heart and soul into it, it really irritated me, because I was like, if only you knew how much shit Trey is dealing with right now. You know, he doesn't want to cancel this jam. You don't want this jam canceled. Nobody wants to see it, right? And then, you know, over the past summer, we were locked down for quite a bit. And then when we reopened, it was like, you know, maybe 50 people could meet up outdoors. I was like, there's no way. Like, I can't do a jam with a 50 people cap because we'll pass that. And then when we did the jam, I was getting really worried that we were going to pass our 100 cap, because that's what it was at. And I've told everybody too, it's like, if more than 100 people show up, those guys are just going to have to go ride the skate park. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not taking the fall for this. It's expensive in Canada for the charges that you'll get for doing that. Yeah. But yeah, how has it been for you guys? Because obviously, you know, you had to deal with stuff like that. But in the States, it's a little different right now with the way they're handling coronavirus.
Yeah, they, I mean, for the most part, I feel like things are fairly loose in the United States. I mean, it is a concern in the back of my mind, like getting just caught up as the ringleader of, you know, a big event during these times in a city where it might not be allowed. But I mean, I don't know. Again, I've just been kind of doing the damn thing and hoping for the best. And, you know, like in the post, I'll try to mention, like, bring a mask. And like, if you're going to go into a store during the jam, like, wear a mask. Like, I'm not going to ask you to wear a mask while riding, but like, respect the area's COVID guidelines, you know, at least while you're at my jam. Do that much at least. I haven't had any problems, again, knock on wood, with getting in trouble for anything like that. But I'm kind of just hoping all this COVID stuff will blow over before it matters any. Again, I haven't had any trouble with it. I was at a street jam before the tour where the police actually showed up. But all they did, and this was in Washington, D.C., they just, like, walked around the crowd, like, telling everybody to put masks on. Like, I don't know. They didn't even seem that concerned with it. They were, like, just follow up COVID guidelines. It was whatever. Everybody put a mask on for long enough for the police to drive away, you know. yeah, I don't think it's affected things that much. I've just been rolling with it. Maybe less people are down to travel to events with the coronavirus going on. But, I mean, everybody's got their own ways with things.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it, too, and I know that people aren't going to really like this, but if you're not really feeling sick, I know there's asymptomatic cases and whatnot, but if you're not feeling sick and you want to go to the gym, I mean, just like you were saying, respect the area's protocol with it. It's really no different than going to the grocery store, right? Like, you're going to be hanging out with these people all day, so I guess you're exposed to it for longer than you would be in the grocery store. But at the same time, you know, it's in the same city. A lot of those people are still going to be hanging out together anyways, right? It's not like they weren't just riding the day before. So it really depends, right? Like, with my jam, I had said to everybody in, like, an Instagram post, and then I was trying to enforce it, was that we're going to take everybody's contact information. If you feel sick at any point during the jam or after the jam and you were there, you need to contact us. And then on top of that, I told everybody you have to, you know, use hand sanitizer whenever we kind of come by, and then wear a mask when we are riding spot to spot, just so that, like, my thing was that when you're riding to the spots, you're going to have more people that are able to see you and see what you're doing, right? So you're going to have more people that are willing to call it in and say, hey, there's a big gathering, nobody's wearing masks. And then when you get to the spot, everybody's riding super hard, so just leave it alone. But dude, that mask rule lasted from the skate park to the first spot, and then no one else did it. And I was like, that's fine. You know, we're outdoors. I guess this is kind of the way that people wanted to go with it, and that's fine, right? And yeah, everything else worked out pretty great, right? Like, we didn't have anybody that got in contact with me afterwards to say that they were feeling sick or anything, or, you know, nothing like that. So clearly that event was pretty good in that respect, I guess.
Yeah, and I definitely, again, like, that's something I try to make sure to mention in all the posts. Like, if you're feeling sick, just don't. Don't be that guy. Don't infect the BMX jam with coronavirus, man. But, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen anybody that seems sick or anything at any of them, but I couldn't be bothered to try to enforce everybody to wear a mask while riding their bike or anything. And then you've got the fact that, you know, there's, I couldn't give you the actual quote. I don't know who actually said it, but there's, like, medical professionals that have stated, like, if you're out, like, being active, like, being athletic, like, it's actually more harmful to wear a mask while you're doing that. Like, you know, you shouldn't work out and stuff with a mask on.
Yeah, so, no, I've definitely heard that.
Can't enforce it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it depends, right? I mean, right now it's so difficult because we're hearing so many different things from so many different sides. And then with everybody, you know, having a voice on social media now, people are able to read just whatever, right? So even I'm getting like, well, what's real and what's not, right? And I think everybody kind of has that feeling nowadays. But yeah, all you can really do is just kind of hope for the best. But I think what you're doing with the jams right now is great. Like, you know, keep doing it. So let's talk about, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina. That was your second stop. Yeah, this was really cool because the bike shop that you guys started at had a bar in it, which is like, if it was my jam, nobody would have left the fucking parking lot because we have coolers that are filled with beer and then, like, you know, a cooler with water and whatnot. And we put that in a follow car that, like, just follows us around for the day. So, yeah, insane, man. We definitely would not have even left the parking lot.
Yeah, dude. I think, I don't know. There wasn't too many people drinking in the morning other than myself. yeah, that was a really cool spot. Soak Easy there in Charlotte. I didn't even know they had a bar until that morning. Honestly, I feel really bad. I never even met the people until that morning. And I don't even know if they knew the jam was going on still. I talked to them via email. And then, like, I got to town a few days before. And I was like, all right, like, first things first, we're going to go to Soak Easy. Like, take hands with those people, meet them, get a feel out of the area, whatnot. And, yeah, it rained for, like, until Saturday, you know. It rained until Saturday, so I just ended up not ever, like, going out there. It was, like, a 45-minute drive from where I'm at, which is than the bus, believe it or not. I just never made it out and just showed up that morning. I felt a little bad about it, but they were really cool people, and it seemed like they had a good time, enjoyed what was going on. You know, obviously people are spending money at the bar at the end of the day, so hopefully it made them a little money. Yeah, that was a really cool spot. I was really stoked on that.
Fuck yeah, man. I think we need more bike shops like that. That's such a cool, interesting concept, yeah. Right? And it's always been something where I'm like, it would be cool if indoor skate parks could serve, like, you know, each person a drink, like, if they wanted one. But, yeah, we don't see a lot of that around here, at least. And I think that's because in Canada, our liquor laws are pretty strict, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never seen a bike shop with a bar in it before. I've definitely thought about it many times, but never seen one. So that was really cool. I was stoked on that. We had like a little bit of an after party there in the parking lot. And then we had an after party at Oso Skate Park, which was like a little indoor owned by like the inline skaters in the area. And they were actually closing down that weekend. We had an after party there. And then me and my filmer went to the Goat Pen, which is like Seamus's, I believe, like personal skate park area. Had an after party there. That was sick. Yeah, definitely a good time in Charlotte.
Yeah, man. The thing that Seamus McCoy is doing right now with the Goat Pen is incredible, man. And I think they just finished it up. Literally like a few days ago, right? There was some stuff in the bowl that they were trying to do. And, I'm not 100% sure what the deal is with that place, but from what I understand, it's supposed to be like a public DIY kind of place. I don't know if it's on his land or how it works, but, I do know that the public donated to help build it. So,
from what I understand, it's like Seamus's like parents' property,
okay,
family's property, something along those lines. And they got like there's not a house on the property or anything. It's just like a big like warehouse type garage area, like a little living space in it, it looks like. And then right behind it, they're pouring that massive bowl. There's a mini ramp inside the garage, and then they got like the mongoose satellite dish outside the garage as well. And yeah, I was actually there when they were like kind of wrapping up the bowl. I got to hit some laps on that. It was really fun. It was literally just missing one piece of flat bottom. And they were talking about doing that the weekend after I left. So just went ahead and rode it without the flat bottom. And that was really cool. It's an awesome thing that they're doing there.
Yeah, definitely, man. I got to get Seamus on the show to talk about that because it is such a cool thing. And on top of that, if you guys don't know who Seamus McCoy is, his fucking riding is incredible, dude. He is so good on a bike, and his video parts have always been incredible, right? Like, there's a video part with the trip, I believe it is, and it's way back, probably like 10 years ago, but that part is awesome, man. I still love it to this day.
The trip tape. Yep.
Fuck yeah, man. Yeah, so during the Charlottesville, or sorry, it wasn't Charlottesville, was it? No, it was Charlotte, North Carolina Jam. There was somebody that ended up leaving in a stretcher. So what happened there? That's always kind of a scary thing to happen at a event.
Yeah, I've never had that happen at an event. It was really scary. There was even dudes there, like, joking about, like, the dude's name was Cameron. They're like, yo, Cam, like, see this guy take over his tour of bike jams. I'm like, bro, like, don't say that. Like, and again, I haven't done like a bunch of research or anything about like insurance for a street jam. The main reason I don't do skate park jams and stuff is you have to acquire insurance. So I don't know anything about that stuff. So it was definitely scary for me as a business owner. And like, the host of the jam, I was like, oh man, like, this could be really bad, like, it could end the tour. It sucked seeing homie on the ground. He was like out, like twitching, like leaking from his head. It was really not good. It was so scary, and I felt so bad for the dude, and I felt like I could have prevented it, because like the spot that it happened, and that was like begging for something like that to happen. And what had happened was, there was like, you want to say like a 10 stair maybe, steps were like too long. It was like a long 10 stair, a big gap, and homie was just, you know, Mach 10 blasting it like everybody else had done. But also, like, 90 degrees from the bottom of those steps, there's a flat ledge. The homie's Mach 10 ramping down the set, and there's another dude coming 90 degrees at the bottom of the stair set to, like, hit the flat ledge. And homie just, like, landed on his back wheel, like, full-on collision and just, like, died, dude. It was so bad. It was so bad. And, like, he went, he, like, seized up, was out cold. And then, like, we seen he was just leaking from the back of his head. And finally came back to, and for the most part, he was all right. He, like, knew his name and everything. But we had called 911, and they came and checked him out. And I didn't hear the entire conversation, but they said, like, he had signs of, like, some kind of head trauma. And they, like, recommended that he ride the ambulance, you know. So he did. And he ended up being okay, from what I've heard since. Just really sucked. You know, again, I feel like I could have prevented it. Like, I kind of realized that the spot was kind of, there was too much going on for a jam at that spot. And I was like, all right, like, we'll hang out here for a minute, you know, and we'll keep it moving. And a minute was all it took, man. So that was gnarly. Felt really bad about that.
Yeah, but I wouldn't keep it as something that, you know, in your head. Like, you probably could have told everybody not to go to that spot. But at the end of the day, like, just because you picked that spot doesn't mean that like, happened because of that, right? Like, it's important to remember that everybody kind of makes their own choices. And if that dude would have, you know, checked to see if there was anybody going to hit the ledge before he tried that, or had the person who hit the ledge had figured out if somebody was going to jump the set first, it wouldn't have happened. But unfortunately, it's BMX, man. It happens, and that's where things go sometimes. Yeah. I definitely don't think it would be a bad idea to do, like, a waiver, you know, get everybody to sign off on that. But it's kind of weird because at the same time, you can't really be sued for, like, you know, for people riding public property. Like, it's kind of on them. But I definitely think at least having something on paper, like, you know, if you get hurt at this event, it's not my fault. You're completely liable for it. Like, even just something like that, just in case. But no, I think you're fine, man. I think definitely you did what you needed to do. And calling 911 was definitely the right move, right? Like, anytime that, like, I've been out filming or I've dealt with somebody who has been knocked out, that's the first step that I take. I don't know if it's just because I'm in Canada and we have free healthcare, but just the fact that, you know, the second that somebody's out, you don't want to touch them because if they broke their neck, they could die if you move them wrong, or you could paralyze them.
Yeah.
And then obviously too, head trauma, you only get one head, man, one brain. So keep it fucking safe. But, yeah, definitely the right move. Good on you for calling 911 on that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. So, why don't
you suck seeing him leave him special, man.
Yeah, definitely. It's unfortunate, but it's unfortunate, but it happens. So why don't you tell us, you know, what city's next and what can we expect there? I hear that, you know, you're in Savannah, Georgia right now, and that is where the next location for the jam is, right?
Yeah. So I'm out here in Savannah. I'm actually at a homie's house now who's been hanging out with me the past few days. He's getting my bus dialed in with some minor repairs and stuff. Things are actually looking really good for Savannah. It's I think it's going to be really core, if that makes sense. Like, dude, like, months ago, hit me up. He was like, oh, where'd you, like, you're coming through Savannah. Like, I got an after party spot. And usually that's, like, one of the last few things I figure out when, like, organizing a jam. It's always nice to have an after party, but it's never, like a major thing at the beginning of planning a jam, you know? I'm like, oh, word, like, cool. And he, like, starts sending me videos and stuff. And dude, like, this dude, his family owns, like, this whole, like, street. And it, like, goes back to a lumber yard. And then he lives on the street. So we're going to, like, get wood from the lumber yard, get as many pallets as we can get together. And we're going to build, like, a giant, like, again, I don't know how it's all going to turn out. We'll see in the next few days. We're going to try to build like a giant vert wall channel gap up against this like busted down abandoned building right across the street from his house. And he's got multiple fire pits and barbecue pits in his backyard. We're going to have a gnarly after party there. And then the jam itself, I just went and peeped the street spots today, and there's like a lot of really cool stuff. Crazy brick ledges, low handrails, all kinds of crazy stuff that's going to get worked at a street jam. I think this one's going to be maybe the gnarliest of them all so far.
Fuck yeah, man. That's really cool, man. I'm really excited to see, the video for that. And I think, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but for each jam that you've done, you guys actually did videos for it for the YouTube channel. So I had those playing while we were talking about the jams. But yeah, sounds...
Actually, I just sent you on Instagram the link to the Charleston video.
Yeah.
I was going to drop that tomorrow, so I sent you the unlisted link. If you want to play that one, like...
Oh, nice. Feel free.
I'll be dropping that tomorrow. So.
Cool, yeah.
And I will actually film myself.
I'll definitely do that. I'll play that in a second here. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about sponsors. I know that we kind of mentioned earlier. However, what really blows me away is that with this jam, right, it's not just one stop. It's not one like day that you'll be giving stuff away. It's a whole tour. You're going to all these places and throwing jams. So finding sponsors for such a big thing like this is definitely pretty difficult, right? Like, it's one of those things that when it comes to brands, sometimes they aren't willing to sponsor, a 20 event series, and which is understandable because at the end of the day, it costs money, right? When they are like donating product, it costs them money. But what I was going to say is that it's pretty cool of the people who have been sponsoring these because it's rad, man. That's what we need. We need more of these.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely been interesting getting sponsors together for this. Like a lot of sponsors that I hit up in the beginning before I like knew the full game plan, they were like really like, oh man, like yeah, it sounds rad, it sounds like what BMX needs, but like they're really hesitant to like get involved. And through talking with them, I actually like developed like sponsorship plan essentially, and pretty much I set it up, and I may expand off of this at some point, but I offered two sponsorship packages. I called it the jam package and the tour package. So pretty much what that like created an opportunity for the sponsors that weren't interested in sponsoring the whole tour to just like pick a few of the jams off of the list and say, yeah, we want to sponsor those ones. And obviously there's like varying benefits for the sponsors that go with each package. I even offered a package to some sponsors, to all the sponsors. I offered a package to like, pitch in cash for cash prizes, and then they could have like a designated contest, if they wanted to. If so-and-so's company wanted to host the best trick contest at my jam for $100 cash prize, they could do that. Nobody signed up for that one, but that's understandable. But things like that, to try to appeal to different companies that like to do things different ways. It worked out all right, I think.
Definitely, man. I think that was the right move. Really thinking about it, you going and getting multiple different sponsors for this is going to be really difficult. But the way that you did it so that, you can either be a sponsor for the whole tour or you can sponsor certain days on the tour, that's the right move, man. Honestly, that's really smart, and you did a good job with that. I think, for a brand to have to jump in and sponsor all of them is definitely very costly, I don't know how much of a tax break they need, because sometimes, these companies, they can get tax breaks by doing donations and whatnot. So maybe just by doing a day or two, it might be perfect for them. But yeah, it's awesome, man. I can't believe that you were able to pull that off. That's really, really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's see here. So, you know, we both have been running jams for years, and I thought, you know, what more could we do? Like, you're doing all these multiple jams and whatnot. I've done my street jams and my park jams, but I think that, unfortunately, we have people that just don't know how to start their own event, and I think that it's important that we have locals doing their own thing, right? Like, it's always good to just go to a local event. So why don't we kind of talk about what you would do to start your own jam?
You know, again, just like going back to my own history with hosting jams, like, I don't know, to me, it's a lot like riding a bike. Like, you're only going to get better at it as you do it more. I started mine very simply. I just made a flyer. I took a photo of me jumping down like a three stair with a group of homies behind me, added, you know, Capital Lou Jam and the St. Louis Arch somewhere on it, something like that. And then I just sent it to a bunch of sponsors and was like, yeah, I'm going to do a street jam in St. Louis. Like, you know, hopefully some people will come through. And if so, I'd really like to have you guys, your guys' support. And a lot of people sent me prizes, and then come jam day, everything was cool. Got to hook everybody up with a lot of cool merch, and I don't know, it was pretty simple that day. Obviously, it's got more complicated since then, but that's just a part of growing with it, you know?
Yeah.
They just do something loose, do something raw, get some sponsors together, get a flyer together, meet up at a Taco Bell, and just ride bikes. You'll get a feel from it from there.
Definitely. And I think that's a good way to start your first jam. That's kind of how I started my first one, right? And I think that's what's important is to figure out right away, you know, do you want to do a street jam or do you want to do a park jam? And you had mentioned that you have to have insurance to do park jams, which in Canada is definitely not a thing, or, you know, at least I haven't done that. I've just gone and hosted events and not really had an issue. But what I was going to say is, realistically, you know, all you need to do is just make a flyer or make some sort of thing, announcement on Instagram, and get everybody to share it. And the day when it shows up, I think a great thing to have is, you know, buy a couple 24 packs of water to give away, just simple stuff like that. And even for sponsors, you know, like, just send out an email. That's the best thing you could do, is just send out a message to your local shop, send it out to, you know, the distribution company in that area, send it out to even bike companies, right? And what's really cool about BMX is that you don't have to be too corporate, right? You don't have to have all this knowledge of how to really write a great email. Just include in there, you know, what day you're going to be doing it. You know, try and send it a couple months beforehand, figure out that stuff first. But yeah, just say what days you're going to be doing it. Say if you guys are going to have a video for it afterwards. But yeah, I guess the main thing is just have fun with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Just get out there, get people on their bikes and have fun. That's all a jam really is at its core, you know?
Definitely.
You know, if you take it seriously and you want to like expand upon it, then you know, you can add to it. You can make it more than that. But really, a jam is just a group of dudes on bikes having a good time. That's all it's about at the end of the day.
Yeah, realistically, you're 100% right there, man. That's all it is, right? And I think that for any kids out there that want to do it, you know, if you guys have more questions or you really want to do it and you're just not sure where to start, send myself a message. I'm sure you would love to get a message and, you know, maybe help out on that. So send Tim a message as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we've covered quite a bit for jams. Let's move on to filming and traveling and whatnot, and then we'll talk about Capital. And then, yeah, we got lots to go. So, yeah, so let's move along to filming here. So I know a while back you were kind of working away on a full-length project. How's that process going?
Not good at all, man. But I have a goal, and like most of my other goals, I plan to accomplish it. And I think that being on the road and having the opportunity to, like, just film riders all over the country will, I'll at least have an early friends section. As far as like filming with like the Capitol crew, it's been slim to none. We got some clips saved up, but a lot of them are pretty old at this point. I try to make my way to St. Louis as often as I can, but right now it's mostly like once a year. I've been trying to get the dudes to travel out to where I'm at, film in other cities and stuff, but it's just been, it's been tough, dude. Filming a full-length video isn't easy. But my main goal at this point is to have a full-length video ready by the next solar eclipse here in North America. So I think that's still like 4 years out, approximately 3 or 4 years out. So I still got a little bit of time I'm working with to get done.
Yeah, there you go, man. Honestly, full lengths are really difficult. And it's one of those things that I learned pretty quickly, right? Like, I've released two. And with that, you know, they were both filmed really locally. Like, we filmed quite a bit in our hometown of Kitchener. But then on top of that, we also went all over southern Ontario and into Quebec for Montreal and whatnot. And I think what's really difficult is that you got to have everybody on board. And in order to make enough progress with it, you have to be around, right? Like for me, it was one of those things that every day after work or after whatever I was doing, I would be going out and filming with somebody, right? And for you, it's just not happening. Like you're doing other stuff at the moment that's kind of taking priority, which is fair, right? Like these jams are a big thing. And what I think you could do is just go, you know, a more non-traditional route and just film a big friends kind of mixtape video, right? Like you're already getting all these clips, you might as well at this point. And then on top of that, yeah, what you were saying earlier about you showing up and riding with these crews a couple days before the jam, that actually gives you a great opportunity to hit these guys up and be like, hey, here's the deal, I'm filming a full length as well as we're doing a jam. I want to try and do this full length as a thing for the jam. You know, I think that would be really cool if you filmed a bunch of stuff behind the scenes of the jams, like, you know, the couple days that you're there beforehand. If you filmed all just that stuff and released that as a full length, I think that would do really well. It would be really cool to kind of see your journey. And if you haven't already, start filming B-roll stuff of you traveling, because I think it would come in handy when it comes to editing and whatnot.
Yeah, I definitely try my best. I'm horrible at self-filming, though. I always tell myself I need to go out and film B-roll in all these cities and whatnot, but a lot of my time is just so eaten up by keeping the tour on the road. You know, making money on the road is a whole other beast that I've never dealt with until like a month ago, so I'm trying to adapt with that. But I definitely like to start doing more filming. Tomorrow here in Savannah, I'm going out filming with some dudes. Got the dude Tommy Glidden, who in Charleston won 3 out of 4 contests. Super cool dude, and he's local here in Savannah. So we're going to be filming with him tomorrow, get him a little part in the Capitol video. Yeah, that should be a good time. And I'd like to do that all throughout Florida and up into the Midwest and whatnot. You know, obviously, hopefully in the Midwest, the St. Louis dudes will start coming around more and start getting more clips while I'm in that area. What I hope for anyways.
Fuck yeah, man. So, you know, while we talk here, I'm just going to show your new video that is unlisted at the moment. It's not posted and it'll be posted tomorrow, which I guess you guys will see this a couple days after it was posted. But yeah, anyways, here we go with the Charleston's video, and we'll just continue doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see here.
The Charleston one, I actually, I filmed and edited that myself.
Nice.
I do have my friend Tyler Rogers from Chicago. He flew out for the first two jams. Was trying to get a feel for it. He likes to document like a lot of the tour. But now he's only doing every other jam. So he wasn't around for Charleston. I filmed that myself. As far as other jams, luckily Charleston worked out. There wasn't a lot of people there. So like I was able to kind of take time away from speaking in a megaphone to film some stuff, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Find some other filmers here on the road to film some of the other jams that he's not able to make.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that when it comes to filming and also hosting a jam, I always have the hardest time with it, right? I've got my camera in my right hand and the megaphone in the other hand, and you're trying to hype and then film and then hype and then film. But yeah, it gets difficult, right? Like with the jam that we did this year, the Money Talks jam, it was so difficult. And you can tell in the filming because it's not my best work at all for filming, but it was just so difficult to, you know, constantly jump from like filming to, you know, hyping everybody and kind of keeping things going. But yeah, it's definitely cool to see that you're trying to do that at least. And what I love is that you actually did have a filmer for the first two jams, right?
Yeah,
so that makes things a lot easier on you, definitely. And it's unfortunate, but all of my friends pretty much suck with a camera, and I know for a fact they would definitely not want to film all day. So,
yeah. And again, shout out to Tyler, like the fact that he comes out, and he's a shredder himself. Like, he comes out to a lot of the Capitol Lou jams. I feel like the past like 3 years, he's taken home prizes. You know, winning highest drop 1 year, best trick another year. Shredder himself, but he flies out specifically to film the jam, not even ride. And like, he just stands there and films all day like a G dude, like, really cool for him to do that.
Yeah, that's fucking rad, man. That's awesome. Yeah. So I was going to ask, what are you using for a camera at the moment?
I have an HDX 200A. That's like my main camera that I'm filming the DVD with. So like, that highlights video I filmed on a GoPro and with my iPhone. You know, the HDX life, like an hour of memory, that thing. And that's like with $300 worth of freaking memory cards. So there's no film in a jam with it. And then the whole, you know, unscrewing the fisheye, resetting the settings, all that, you know, just trying to get separate angles. That's the whole nightmare that I wouldn't want to deal with at a jam. I have the GoPro in my pocket, my phone in my other pocket, and I got the job done.
Yeah, exactly, man. I've actually found that, you know, the HVX is a great camera when it comes to filming anything to do with not jams, you know, like it's great for filming full lengths. It's great for anything that you have the time to set up and just do what you need to do. But when it comes to filming a jam, my A7 that I'm using to actually record the podcast right now is perfect. Like, you know, you just throw a wide angle on it. And then if not, you can just pop that lens off and throw on the long lens and shoot long. But it's way quicker. And then on top of that, I have a top handle and the camera is really light and versatile. There's so much that you can do with it. But I think the main thing that really pushed me towards using that for jam filming is the fact that I have a 3-hour memory card in it, and that will collect enough footage for, you know, a 6-hour jam. Whereas the HVX, I've only ever used a 32 gig card, which gets 35 minutes of 1080i 60p. And that's it, you know, like it's just, that's where it ends. Like, it's unfortunate, but yeah, those cards are so fucking expensive, man. And I'm definitely not about to drop $200 on a 64 one. Like, it's so expensive.
Yeah. And I've even heard like problems with using the 64 gig one. I think it's 64 is using those in an HDX. So I've always been told just double up on 32s, you know, have 70 minutes of footage. But that and just holding an HVX all day, you know, it's one thing to hold it for an hour while filming a homie, you know, get a banger done, but like just standing there chasing everybody with it in a jam, absolutely not.
Yeah, no way, man. Those things are heavy. And on top of that too, you know, when I'm out filming and we're going for something and I know it's going to take a while, right? Like a couple hours of just doing whatever. Yeah. I throw that thing on a tripod. Like if I'm able to, if I'm shooting a long lens, definitely tripod all the way. But if it comes to fisheye, there's quite a few times where I'll just set it down for a minute, get a good stretch in, you know, and then go from there. So yeah, you had mentioned this a little earlier, and that's the fact that, you know, you have to make money on the road, obviously, right now. So quite a big thing is that, you know, with these jams, you're traveling, and that is all out of pocket because companies aren't paying for that. So for you, how are you kind of going about making money at the moment to be able to support these jams and make them happen?
I mean, essentially, since I've started the tour, I've kind of got into, like, I mean, you could almost call it, like, picking, I guess, you know, but, like, BMX style. So, actually, while I was in North Carolina during my first two stops of the tour, I came up on a total of 3 parts lots that, you know, I got them for, like, crazy good deals. The first two were just, like, you know, like, I was over at homie's houses riding their ramp, you know, just shooting the shit with them, talking about, like, how I make my living. They're like, oh, you're parts. Well, shit, come over to my shed. And it's just, like, used parts galore. You know, all their BMX parts from the past 10-plus years that they've been riding, just collecting dust. And they'll sell it all to me for a decent price, man. And I just throw all that on my website. On eBay, you know, and a lot of it sells. As I was saying earlier, I have like a bike shop in the back of the bus. Essentially, I've got a wall of bike parts, and then at jams, you know, if somebody breaks the stem or something, I sell them a stem for the low. You know, I use stem for like 50% of what it costed originally. A lot of people will jump right on that. Yeah, that's pretty much how I'm making my money, just buying BMX parts and selling them. More money.
Hell yeah, man.
Crazy to think, but
dude, I love it. That's great. Honestly, I think there's a need for used bike stuff, right? Like, you know, obviously back in 2019 you started Tim's Pre-Owned BMX, which is an online used BMX shop, and it's just one of those things that unfortunately most shops aren't really able to take in used product, right? They can't guarantee that it's going to last, and they've got stuff that they're bringing in that's brand new that sells anyways, right? Why would they want to deal with the headache? But at the end of the day, there's still a market for used BMX parts, right? Like, a lot of people will need them if, you know, maybe they're not the greatest rider and they just want something new, or maybe it's something that, you know, they wanted to get their hands on years ago and just weren't able to, right? Like, we see that a lot where products would be so rare. And it's not even like rare to everybody. It's just one of those things that maybe you had that product years ago, threw it out, got rid of it or whatever. And then all of a sudden, 10 years from now, you want it back. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's another great way to do it. And on top of that, too, you're going to look at the product as if you're going to ride it. So for you, it makes sense, right? Like, you're not just going to buy any crappy thing and try and sell it off, right? Like, you're going through this stuff, making sure that it's good quality and that it's got lots of life left.
Yeah, and again, most where I'd kind of consider it, like, picking, because, like, and all those lots of parts I bought, there was plenty of parts that I was like, I'll hold off on that. Like, it's not a little too beat, like,
yeah.
Or it's just something I don't know enough about. Like, you know, I wouldn't ride it myself. I'm not going to bother with trying to sell it, you know. And that applies to, like, old school BM and everything. Like, I don't know. Like, old school stuff, there's a lot of money in that, but I don't know anything about it, so I leave it be, you know. I mostly do new school freestyle parts, or like late mid school freestyle parts, you know, stuff that people still ride nowadays. And again, being in a bus, I don't have a whole lot of space for extra stuff, so I gotta minimize it somehow by being picky like that.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think the idea with the bus is great because you can do that, you know, as a person who's kind of on their own with this, you're able to really just do what you need to do. You've got enough space for the bike parts, and then you've got enough space for a bed and maybe a cooktop, whatever you're using to cook and whatnot. So yeah, you know, Like you were saying, you kind of go around and find different people that would be willing to sell you stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Honestly, that's a really cool idea.
Seamus was one of the people I got to buy some stuff from, and it was crazy. He sold me like some FDM stuff, and it was like, wow, like this dude got these parts like through a sponsorship. You know, dude that's been riding, been in so many influential videos for so many years now. I'm like, I have these now. Like, these are in my possession. Like, it was just so cool. And it's like some of the stuff, it's like I didn't even want to sell it, but you know, kind of had to. It's what pays the bills. It's what keeps the show on the road. And quite frankly, I don't have room living in a bus to start a BMX collection as much as I want one.
Yeah, definitely, so, man.
You know, when I started this, I sold my spare bike with brakes on it. I sold a lot of parts for like a build I was doing. I was going to build a tribute bike, my original first aftermarket BMX bike that got stolen. Sold all that. I had a lot of parts to go on it. Yeah, kind of had to minimize everything to fit my whole life into a bus.
Yeah, fair enough, man. So why don't we talk a little bit about the bus? What have you got going on in there? Is it basically just, you know, drive and sleep, and then washroom, cooking, and everything is dealt with afterwards? Or do you have anything for cooking? Do you have a compost toilet in there? Anything like that?
So at the time, it's like super minimal. Everything's so minimalist right now. It's crazy. But essentially, I really wasn't ready for this at all. I wanted to do more to the bus before doing this. Hell, I barely got like the bike shop built in the back. I ended up like building the wall, everything off, have the wall apart myself. And it was expensive, and I don't know, I just couldn't afford to do much more before starting the tour. But I got in the front, I got my bed, a full size bed. I built the wooden bed frame. It's got like a storage under it. So that's where I just keep like all my things that I don't use on a daily basis, you know. Store away my hoodies and shit for the winter time. I got a microwave up there, but I don't have any power at the moment. Eventually I'd like to do solar or something along the line, but right now I got the microwave. Like George Foreman grill, but they're only good if I got an extension cord plugged up. You got a big wheelchair lift in my way. I'm trying to get rid of that sometime soon. Apparently they're worth good money. I just got to get this one fixed so I can sell it. And yeah, I got my dresser, all my clothes in it. And then I built the wall. Eventually I'd like to get an entertainment center and like a TV mounted to the wall on like living quarters side of the bus, and then the back side of that wall, I got grid wall on there, and it's stacked to the brim with BMX parts. And then I got all the Capital merchandise and stuff in the back. It's like a little shop in the back half, kind of my business space, little area for me to get all that handled, pack up orders and whatnot.
Hell yeah, man. I always love hearing about bus builds. It's something that my girlfriend and I are really interested in, and we're kind of just saving up money at the moment for ours, and we're going to do like a full-size bus, and our plan is to kind of live on it for a few years. So we're going into this with like, you know, we have to have a working shower. We have to have a like working washroom. We have to have, you know, everything that we have in our apartment now, essentially, like all the necessities we have to have and be able to use. So yeah, just to hear about, you know, kind of how you're going about it is really interesting too, because obviously, right, like you got to make it happen. And yeah, you're doing a good job with it, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As far as like showers, you know, like I have a Planet Fitness membership. I think it's like $25 a month, and I can use like literally any Planet Fitness in the country. And most of them are 24/7. So it's like, you know, I can take a shower at 5 a.m. fifth drunk if it comes down to it.
Yeah, definitely.
I've always got a shower if I need it. And then like doing my laundry, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, there's a homie somewhere along my travels that'll let me wash clothes at their house. And if not, like, I don't mind hanging out at a laundromat to do it. You know, I work from my phone. That's how I make money. So for me to sit at a laundromat and work from my phone while my clothes wash, not one bit.
Yeah, definitely not that big of a pain, eh? Yeah.
Not for me anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Hell yeah, man. It's really cool to see that you're really trying to make this happen and you're going somewhere with it. And yeah, moving on from that, why don't we talk a little bit about, you know, something that you're kind of known for, and this is having a really fucked up wrist. So your wrist is done, dude. I hear about it all the time, but, you know, I never really heard the story of how it happened. So when was your first wrist injury, or the injury that has kind of left you with a really messed up wrist?
Yeah, I'll try to give you the long story as short as possible, because it's a lot. Essentially, once upon a time, I was at the skate park. I, like, 180'd out of bank. I was just, like, faking ridiculously long. And then on the other end of the park, my homie 180'd out of the other bank was faking ridiculously long. And we're just, like, both out of each other's peripheral visions, I guess. Just, like, faking into each other. Like, simple little crash. And I was, like, fell, put my hand out. And, like, I thought I sprained my wrist. And I just, like, oh, man, it's just sprained. Like, I keep riding. Like, and I rode on it for, like, I think a couple months. And it just, like, never got to feeling better. I went and seen a doctor again. I like it wouldn't show up on an x-ray, but we had an MRI done, and they found that there was like a crack in my scaphoid, which is like a little tiny, like peanut sized bone in your wrist, kind of like connects your thumb to your arm, kind of, I guess. So I cracked that in half, just simply falling off the bike and putting my hand down. So they casted me up for that. I let it heal, started riding again, and then I re-broke it. I was just like riding across a ledge in an area, like a really stuck up city where the police had like taken my name down twice. And they were like, the third time we take your name down for riding BMX around here, we're arresting you. So I'm riding across this ledge and I just like see a cop driving by. And I just lock eyes with the cop. Like, oh shit, like, I gotta go. And then I like was like, oh shit, I should pay attention to what I'm doing. I'm like riding BMX across the ledge here. And as soon as I look down, like my front wheel off the end of the ledge. I'm going OTV off the end of this ledge. Broke it again. And then funny enough, the same bank I 180'd out of, and broke my wrist the first time many years or a couple years later. I did a 540 out of it, got greedy, was like, I'm going to do 540 at the 5 cab now. Like, first try going for the 5 cab out, I, like, just spun the 540 wrong, put my hand down again, broke it the third time. Got casted up, went through all that again. And then finally when that's healed, I went to 3 off of some ledge and... it was like a real narrow ledge, and I like spun, and I like tried to like carve into the fin, which was a really dumb idea, like considering how narrow the ledge was. So my wheel like rolled off the edge. I went to a smith, and you know, again, OTB off the end of the ledge, broke my wrist the fourth time. Went and seen my doctor after that, and you know, she was pretty much like, all right, dude, well, like, this thing's not a strong bone anymore, so we'll just pop a screw in it. You'll be fine after that, back to normal. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I don't know. Honestly, I didn't mind riding with the broken wrist. I got used to it after a while, but I was like, all right, you know, this lady's going to fix it, so like, we'll go ahead and do that. And pop the screw in, I think like the first week after surgery, like, I couldn't do anything with it. It was like in a cast and whatnot, you know, but like, I could almost like feel in my wrist that it felt stronger. And like, I was like, oh yeah, like, this is going to be good for me. And then after about a week, dude, my wrist just like swole up like a blimp inside the cast. and like hurt like bad, like deep down inside. It was gnarly as fuck. And I like kept calling the doctor's office and whatnot. And they kept telling me like, oh, this is normal, yada, yada, yada. Kept calling. Finally, they got me in. They took the cast off. They looked at it. They're like, hey, yeah, it's swollen, but like, you know, that'll happen after surgery, yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, I don't think so, because like it felt really good like for the week before this started happening. Yeah, so pretty much they kept like being like, nah, it's good. Every time I would see them. And finally, like, there was a day I was working in a lumberyard, dude. Like, I was in my van crying. Like, fucking hell, dude. Like, it hurt so bad from the inside. Like, it was probably one of the most painful things I've ever dealt with. And I called them. They're like, all right, fine. Like, you know, come on into the office. Your doctor is on vacation, you know, but we'll just have somebody else look at it this time. You know, send you on your way again. This doctor, he walked in, he looked at my wrist, and he said, oh, shit, dude, like, I'll be back with a needle, which is crazy, because, like, my surgeon never poked it with a needle or anything. He shoved a needle in, dude, my wrist started squirting pus all over the room, dude, it was disgusting. And, yeah, he was like, yeah, so your wrist is infected, like, bad infected. So if she can't do the surgery on Friday when she gets back from vacation, then I'll just do it on Thursday. Like, we'll just bypass that problem. So she ended up, they called her. She was like, fine, yeah, I'll, you know, first thing Friday morning when I get back from vacation, I'll do it. All right, cool. Whatever. So I guess she went to clean the infection out, and what she did was she opened up like the top layer of my flesh in my wrist, and she like cleaned all the pus out of my flesh.
Yeah.
And stitched it back up, sent me on my way. She was like, yeah, I think it was just a skin infection. I'm like, it'll be fine after that. All right, cool. And then after that, the incision site from that surgery never closed up. It was constantly draining pus. And I think it was like a month, maybe 2 months, where I'd see her like for like weekly checkups. And every week my wrist looked the same. There was no progress. And she'd just like clean it, poke it, you know, squeeze it, be like, does it hurt there? Yeah. You just like put it off as much as possible. Like it was honestly ridiculous. And, yeah, finally she was like, okay, well, I don't think the incision's going to close up, so it's more than just a skin infection. No shit. Obviously. So finally she opened it up and went all the way, like, all the way back to the original surgery site, deep inside my wrist. And all I remember from that surgery was waking up afterwards, and the first thing she said to me is, so, you know, like a peanut, and how like the scaphoid's like shaped like peanut. These are her words. That so the scaphoid's like a peanut, and yours right now is like a peanut without the nuts in it, just a peanut shell. And the screw was actually just loose in the bone. It wasn't attached to anything anymore. It was rattling around inside the peanut shell of a bone. And you're like, yeah, so like my bone is and completely deteriorated from the inside out.
Fuck, that is wild.
Yeah, so she cleaned out the infection, and then what they did was they put me on a PICC line, which is like a household IV. So what they did was they ran a 3-foot tube. I got a scar somewhere on my arm right here, into my arm, into like the main artery or whatever right there, vein, whatever it is. 3-foot tube ran through that vein all the way up my shoulder and down into like the like main artery right above my heart. And that was to pump like the real antibiotic directly into my heart, because they're so strong, I guess, if I just had them injected and into the vein itself, like it would just like rupture the vein or the artery So I had a 3-foot tube running through something of mine going to my heart, and I had to be hooked up to these antibiotics pumping into my heart. And it was like about an hour and a half each time, 2 times a day. And it was crazy because it was in my left arm, and I had a cast on my right hand, you know, and like my hand was completely immobilized. So like I was a couch potato, and like living at my parents' house. God bless my mom. She had to hook me up to this machine twice a day for an hour and a half at a time to essentially keep me from dying.
Holy fuck. That is wild.
And that did kill the infection over time. I had to do that for a while. I don't even remember how long. A few months at least. Had to do that every day. And that killed the infection. And then after that, I was left with the aftermath of it all, which was my wrist had, like, pretty much rotted away from the inside out. Like, not just the bone, but, like, the infection ate all the cartilage in between all my bones, which are, like, you know, that's like, what lets the bones move around each other, you know? Like, so after that, like, moving my wrist whatsoever was just incredibly, incredibly painful. And mind you, through all of this, there's like some kind of limitation where like you cannot see another surgeon about a problem until you're 90 days clear of a surgery. So like there was never an opportunity for me to like leave the surgeon. I was depending on that surgeon for my life, even though she was doing a half-assed job. So finally, like, the infection's gone, and I just waited 90 days in misery. Like, couldn't use my hand at all. Like, it was just totally shot. Like, and, like, I think the way they told me that they said I have the arthritis of, like, a 90-year-old. Like, there's just nothing between my bones. They're just grinding on each other all day and all night. So finally got 90 days free of surgery. I went and seen this dude, Dr. Goldfarb, my freaking hero. Dude, like, operates on, like, the St. Louis Blues and Cardinals, like, you know, sports team players. So, like, he's the real deal. And he was kind of hesitant to, like, approach the situation, I feel like. So he offered me what was called a partial wrist fusion. So what he did was he got rid of the bone entirely, that it was just shot. And funny enough, I asked him to let me keep the bone. After all the hell it caused me, I wanted to gold plate it and put it on a chain. He told me, no, I can't do that. And I'm like, well, that's a bummer. Just go ahead and take a photo of it for me, at least. Worst thing I could have asked for. After that surgery, again, like, the first thing I remember coming to is him putting a phone in my face. It's just like a blue rag with pink paste on it. Like, what is that? What are you showing me? He's like, that's your bone. We had to, like, holy grind it to vacuum it out of you. I'm like, oh, shit. Should have just said that, dude. I wouldn't have wanted to keep it. see it. Oh, so gnarly. But yeah, he took the bone out, and then he bolted the rest of the, like, tiny bones in my wrist together. And what that did was, it gave me limited mobility, so I had, like, half of the motion of my wrist after that. And I probably waited a half a year or more for that to heal. And, like, he was really confident that, like, you know, it would feel normal and I'd just have half mobility. And that just never happened. It was, like, I had half mobility, but that half mobility still felt just as every bit as miserable as moving my wrist before that surgery. So at that point, he was like, all right, well, you know, like, I would never recommend this surgery to you, being what I was 21 at the time, 21 probably, I think. But yeah. I would never recommend this surgery to somebody your age. This is something we do on, like, 8-year-olds, but, like, we can just do away with the wrist. Like, he said, we'll like, scrape the rest of the cartilage out from between the bones, and just run a fucking titanium rod through there, titanium screws, And, you know, by the time it's done healing, literally all the bones, like, because there's no cartilage between them, they just grow together and become like a super bone.
Yeah.
So as of that, I no longer have my dominant wrist. It's completely gone. It doesn't bend. You can see kind of maybe the big blown out part on the bone where I have my bone vacuumed out. And then on top, the long scar where I've got a titanium plate holding it all together. The wrist is done. It'll never be a wrist again. I just have arm and hand, with riding and stuff, like the elbow and shoulder just have kind of adapted to take over what the wrist once did. That's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I don't have the wrist anymore, but I don't have to live my life in misery anymore either. So it was a fair trade, I guess.
Yeah, definitely, man. That sounds like it would have sucked beforehand, right? Like every day you're dealing with this one thing that's bothering you in your wrist, which is super important, right? And to hear that you had to get it like fused together is wild, man. And it's interesting to see that like, you're still able to ride and whatnot pretty easily, right? Like you're still doing X-up rides and whatnot, which I guess doesn't really affect the wrist that much, but you would think it would.
It didn't come until after all this.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I learned how to X-up ride as a result of losing my wrist. I had to like entirely relearn everything. And honestly, even today, like I finally relearned half cab manual threes and tail whip. Which like those were some of my favorite tricks I learned shortly before losing my wrist. And like for a long time, I've been so in my head about if I'll like ever be at a point where I can do those tricks again. So it's been like a slow learning curve, but like on the other hand, like I've learned so much because of it. And a big part of it was like for a while, I was riding, but like my wrist physically couldn't handle bunny hopping.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so like all the things I would normally do were just like out the window. So I started doing like rocket manuals galore. And then I figured out X up rides and it's like, you don't even got to hop into it or hop out of it. You just lift your handlebars backwards and cruise down the street like that. You know, it's freestyling somehow, even though it wasn't how I rode before. It was something to keep me entertained on the bike. That kind of stuff is translated over now that I'm like actually riding again. Now I got cool side combos and stuff and rocket manual combos to add to all the shit I used to do while still trying to bring all that back too.
Fuck yeah, man. That's awesome.
My riding style a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's good to hear that everything's kind of working out for it now and whatnot. I know that you've struggled with it for years, so to hear that whole story is pretty wild. I've always been kind of interested in how that came about, right? So, that's wild, dude. So, yeah, we are getting close to 2 hours here. Let's, let's do some fan questions, and then I got one more for you, and we'll end it off there. So, yeah, this first one comes in from Bunky Dunn. What do you guys think?
Bunky!
There you go. You. So Bunky's saying, what do you guys think about guys who ride 22-inch to 26-inch bikes instead of the traditional 20-inch BMX bike?
I like it all, you know. Me, I'll watch everything from skateboarding to scooter riding to BMX and mountain biking, you know, so. I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on it. It's just all having fun. It's a mutual between all of it, I think. But I do gotta say, Bunky is one hell of a dude. He came to the first stop of the tour in Raleigh, North Carolina, as well as the second stop. Dude was on a 26-inch like dirt jumper bike. I'm like, okay, cool. Like we got like a dude cruising around enjoying the jam. Nope, he wasn't just doing that. This dude was hitting handrails all day long on a 26-inch dirt jumper. And it was like, all right, well, that's actually really raw. and like BMX is fun, just not necessarily a BMX bike. So yeah, I mean, I'm all for it, especially like seeing it thrown down at a BMX jam was like so cool. It's brought variety to the jam.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. One of my best friends and the photographer that we use at, HVX Go Productions. Chris Johnson, he rides a 26-inch bike. Dude's incredible. And he's just so fucking tall that like, it looks ridiculous if he's on a 20-inch, right? But he still loves to ride. So yeah, he's got a 26-inch with the pegs and whatnot on it, constantly shredding, always doing fun stuff. So it's good to have people like that in the scene. And I don't know if you've ever rode a 22-inch BMX bike, Tim, but they're a lot of fun and they're really cool. You know, I think it's the perfect step up if you're like an older guy, you know, who's ripping trails and maybe, you know, your back's hurting a little bit from hunching too much and you want something a little bigger. Yeah, those 22-inch bikes are incredible, man. I definitely want one just to cruise around on because they're so close to being a BMX, but they just have that little bit more, you know, added comfort to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I've rode a handful when I was working at the bike shop, built a handful, you know, test rode a handful. And they're sweet. It's crazy how similar they are, but different. I don't think I could ever ride one personally, at least not like for the kind of riding I do, you know, like on a daily basis, but it's still cool and a good option for a lot of people. I mean, they're so popular nowadays. It's crazy. Like, they're the perfect bike for like a dad who wants to get back into BMX as the son's getting into it, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely, man. And, you know, one of my favorite interviews I've done of all time was with Jim Selinski, who kind of invented the 24-inch freestyle BMX bike with the Sunday Model C, right? Yeah. And to see Jim... Yep. Completely take the BMX world by storm on a 20-inch and destroy, you know, constantly do the craziest shit. He was the grind master, right? Like everything. And then to take that to a 24-inch and kill it and, you know, still be able to do crazy downside hand plants, all that wild shit, but do it on a bigger bike and do it just as clean. That's incredible, man. I love to see that stuff. And yeah, I would love to have a 24-inch, you know, Model C or anything like that. Those things are sick.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah. So moving on from that, this one comes in from Kayak_22. Kayak's a good homie of yours, right?
Yeah. I called him my best friend a few times.
What's Timmy's most memorable moment in the beautiful Capital van?
Oh, geez. The whole Capital van. Most memorable moment of the Capital van. That's tough. That's really tough, honestly. So many memories in that piece of shit, crusty ass van.
Was that the brown van that you were using a while ago?
It was gold, Cam.
Oh, yeah.
Keep that negativity to yourself. Yeah, it was gold, not brown.
I love it.
Yeah, the gold. Well, I guess the rust was brown. Yeah, the gold and brown.
Yeah.
That thing was a trooper. I'd pay like $1,300 for it with 135,000 miles. And ran it up to like 185,000 miles, I think, before it died in Denver. Great BMX fan. I think everybody needs a BMX fan like that. But my most memorable moment in it, that's so hard. Honestly, I'd have to say, I think it was Capital Lou Jam 2, like the biggest year yet. Homie like broke his frame at the jam. I was like, dude, I got you. Like, I got a frame in the van. I'll just go get the van and like, get you hooked up. So we did that. Drove the van like to the street spot everybody was at. And then I was like, fuck it, let's just like everybody just follow the van to all the street spots from here on out. And I had the homie day on driving the van, and we're being Kayak, they're like standing in the back, like yelling at people with the megaphone. We got people sketching off the van and stuff. I think that was when the van was just past you. That was the most memorable moment for not just myself, but a lot of people that know the Capitol van that were there that day.
Fuck yeah, man. That's incredible. Yeah, it's cool to see how far, you know, a vehicle will take you and how much it'll mean to you when it comes to BMX stuff, right? Like my buddy Eric, he's a really good friend of mine. He goes by BMX Taxi on Instagram. It all started with this shitty green Sunfire. It was like the crappiest car, but his whole thing was like he bought 5 bike racks, right? A 3-tray top rack and then a 2 on the back. And it was like just this crappy car that we would just go to different parks in. And a lot of good memories in that car, man. Definitely pretty cool to think back on it.
Oh, yeah. Rad. Yeah. The old Capitol van. She, it sucked to see her go. I really wanted to send her off in a fiery abyss, but, you know, she broke down in Colorado, and I put some ads out. I was like, yo, like, who can help me explode my van? And I got so many replies, people out there in that area. Dude, like, we got property and explosives and all that, but Colorado has a fire ban right now. So we're just not interested. I'm in the perfect place to blow it up.
And, yeah.
You know, just bad timing, you know. Nobody wanted do any fires of any sort in the area and get arrested for it, you know. So I ended up sending her to a junkyard, and when I came up on the bus.
That's wild, man. Yeah, so as we talk about this, I'm looking outside, out, you know, into the Canadian wilderness, and in front of my house, there's somebody doing a drug deal right now. I'm like, I don't even live in a sketchy area. So I'm like, God damn, dude, fucking go away. I'm like, they keep looking up here, too. I'm like, I'm trying to podcast, man. I get it. You're looking up here, but keep those fucking things away. Dude. Alrighty. So,
gotta love a random drug deal.
It's just so funny because I'm like, I literally live in like the most quiet area of the city and like really far from kind of everything. So I'm like, what the fuck? But yeah, they just hopped in a van and they're like just sitting there right now. I bet you that they're gonna get out and that van's gonna drive off.
Oh yeah. God damn.
Definitely. Oh man. So yeah, this last fan question comes in from the NC Lime. What's your favorite city that you've gone to so far?
That's a tough one. That's a real tough one. I'd say as far as the tour goes, Anna so far. I've been having a great time here. I really love the weather. Just like how tropical it is down here. It's been very relaxing, nice change of pace. My most favorite city to ride in general is Little Rock, Arkansas, which I recently dropped an edit that I filmed in Little Rock. Spent like 2 days filming that, I think. That place is just crazy. There's like so little of a BMX or a skate scene there that there's not really anybody out constantly tearing up spots. So like they still build street spots regularly. Like the place is a skate park of street spots. The whole downtown area is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Most fun city to ride hands down for like actual riding. Chicago, I've never gone there and had a bad time. That place is great for just getting crazy. And then obviously I'll always have love for St. Louis. I always make sure to go back there and give back to the community that raised me up from the 13-year-old shithead BMX rider I once was. St. Louis is obviously all-time favorite. The park, the street, how big the city is. You know, the suburbs go on forever, it seems like, compared to a lot of cities I've been to recently, which means, you know, the street spots go on forever, too.
And yeah.
It's endless there, it seems like, and so lawless, like, as far as BMX stuff goes, you know, you can get away with pretty much all the things you want to get away with.
Fuck yeah, man. That's awesome. Yeah, it's cool to hear that the scene down there is awesome, right? Like, you've been going to all these places and everybody seems really hyped on it. So, yeah, man, that's incredible. Yeah, I got one last question for you and then we'll send her off there. What's your advice for people out there who want to start their own brand and bring their community up?
My advice, I mean, again, I can only speak from my own experience. I never really had anybody guide the way, you know? So, when I started, it was simply me and my best friends at the time. We all rode BMX together every day, if not every day. So, we just kind of figured we'd brand it somehow. And, you know, we came up with the term Capital Crew. We're the Capital Crew. And we got a BX 2100 camera off eBay for like $200-$300, whatever, you know, and started filming YouTube videos with it. I think at one point we went on our first road trip together as a crew to Chicago, actually. Little VX video while we were there, started a little series of, we called it the road tripping series, which I would like to, you know, bring back at some point. But, we would just go to cities and film and edit in each city and like with crew or team or however you want to put it, just kind of built our reputation that way. And then eventually, you know, decided, all right, let's start giving back the community by doing these jams, and obviously that was a big way to spread the word about what we're doing. And you know, I always wanted to start a brand, but I don't feel like I ever really like the work to like make it a brand thoroughly. Like, there's work that goes into it, but like it all just happened naturally through riding my bike with my friends. It all started there, and we just added the word capital to it, you know, to brand ourselves, you know, made t-shirts, you know. I think the first batch of t-shirts I did cost me like $300 for 50 of them. My advice to anybody who wants to do anything similar to what I've done is get together with your friends and make videos, put out content on the internet, you know, come up with a logo and a name and add that to the content and just push that shit. If you make merchandise, push that shit too, you know, get people wearing that stuff everywhere. Before you know it, I mean, who knows, maybe you'll be doing a tour of bike jams across the country one day. I don't know.
Fuck yeah, man. There you go. Yeah, Tim, thank you so much for doing the show today. Before we go, you know, what you got going on in the future? Tell us the future dates for the jam and where can people go to buy product from you to support your journey?
Yeah, so if you would like to support what I'm doing, by all means, 100% of the money that makes this happen comes from www.capitalbmxbrand.com. You can check out the shop section where I've got all the merchandise available. I've got shirts, hat, handmade rolling trays shaped like a VX camera with a fisheye. I've got grind wax shaped like beer. So yeah, again, www.capitalbmxbrand.com. 100% of the proceeds from there go towards keeping the tour on the road. I've got shirts, hats, handmade rolling trays shaped like a VX camera. I got grind wax shaped like beer, packaged in a koozie, super convenient, good amount of wax too. I got spoke balls, tennis balls with my logo on them. You can jam them in wheels. And then if you check out the frame and parts section of the site, I've got a bunch of bike parts, much everything you can need to dial in your BMX bike on there, at really great prices too, I might add, cheaper than MSRP for sure. So all that keeps the tour on the road.
Fuck yeah, man.
Your other question was, sorry, I got sidetracked.
No, that's okay. So my other question was, what are the future dates that you got going on here?
Oh yeah. So the future dates, I've kind of got them planned out for the next 10 stops. But I'll release all that on the Capital BMX brand Instagram here within the next few weeks. So definitely follow on there to stay up to date. I don't want to go releasing too much info too soon. I like to keep it all as organized as I possibly can.
Fair enough, man. What places are you going to pretty soon, though?
After Florida, I'll be doing Atlanta, Nashville, St. Louis for Capital Lugen, Kansas City, Des Moines, Chicago, and then I'm going to head back down south again after that. So there'll be a lot of fun stops around the Midwest and beyond after that. And eventually I'd like to do every major city in the country, hopefully by the year 2023. So
fuck
I'll
yeah,
definitely
man.
Be coming to a town near all of you watching this right now at some point.
Hell yeah, man. I love it. Yeah. So, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been awesome. And, yeah, I'm glad that you were able to make time for this.
Oh, yeah, dude. Thank you for having me on here. It was definitely an interesting experience. I've never done anything like this.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, dude, thank you. The pleasure was mine. And, yeah, for everybody that's come this far, thank you guys for watching. And we will see you in the next one. Peace.